Hello everyone and welcome to this new episode of our podcast series, which is today about climate change and charities. The impact of climate change has been felt across the world, from floods to wildfire, from acidification to global greening, from melting glaciers to species extinctions. It's time for the world to act, and it's time to take meaningful actions on climate change. And charities should be at the forefront of the action. They should lead by example, showing people in our communities how to engage, how to champion sustainability, how to collaborate, and more importantly, how to protect the planet. But at the moment, many charities, including ourselves at Charity Digital, are not doing enough. In this special podcast, which is actually our 100th podcast, we explore the relationship between climate change and the charity sector. We will discuss, amongst other things, how charities can get involved in the fight, the internal actions they can take, the personal actions you, our listeners, can take, and much more. Today, I'm joined by a fantastic team of colleagues, Oyuan Mark Jones, our content editor, and Nick Wyatt, our growth marketing executive. Hello, both.
Hello.
Hello.
And hope you're very well.
Great, thank you.
Very good. Very good.
Well, great. Well, let's dive straight in. Can someone start by giving us a brief definition of climate change?
I can take over there. Thank you, Lisa, for the introduction. So climate change, broadly speaking, refers to long-term shifts in weather patterns and average temperatures. Worth noting, we've kind of moved away from global warming, which was just a sort of an outdated term now, because it's too simplistic and essentially is a bit outdated now. So since the 1800s, humans have released greenhouse gases into the air, or more greenhouse gases into the air, due to oil and gas and coal for homes, factories and transport, and due to modern farming methods and other causes. So those greenhouse gases, which mostly we think of as carbon dioxide and increasingly methane, largely produced by cows, a lot more awareness of that since Cowspiracy and various other documentaries that sort of highlighted that as a fundamental cause. These greenhouse gases trap the sun's heat and cause temperatures to rise. That's the so-called greenhouse effect, which basically works as solar energy gets absorbed onto the Earth's surface and radiated back into the atmosphere as heat. As the heat goes back to space, literally just heads back to space, typical gases would allow it to just naturally make its journey, but as greenhouse gases, because of the molecular biology of them, they absorb more heat, which brings up the temperature on planet Earth. So yeah, since the 19th century, the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere has increased by 50%. The amount of methane is around 150% in terms of increasing in concentration of methane. So climate change is basically a response to that. We're presently about 1.2 degrees Celsius warmer than we were in the late 1800s. And of course, if that continues, scientists say if it's less than 1.5, that mitigates many of the major risks. And on current trajectories, we're heading towards about 3.2 degrees Celsius, which obviously could be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. It could indeed be without being too dreadful, I suppose, existential. Some of the main impacts are shifts to the hydrological cycle, melting sea ice glaciers, as you mentioned earlier, rising sea levels, more extreme weather patterns. And I think the more important element to mention is what these things do. These sort of results from our climate and results from the planet have the impact on human life, i.e. risks to water supplies, conflict and climate migration, localized flooding, extinction of entire species, damage to marine ecosystems, fisheries failing, loss of biodiversity, change in seasonality, which we kind of seeing in real term at the minute, drought and wildfires and so on. Food insecurity is also a big one. These are the main things to consider, and those are the things that will occur. They are real, and we are seeing real examples of them across the world right now, and everyone needs to get involved, and from a sort of individual level right through to a government level, really.
No, absolutely. Thank you, Johan, for this very comprehensive definition. I don't know if you wanted to add more to that.
No, I don't think I've got anything to add to that. I think Johan stole everything I would ever say in that situation. So thank you very much, and for covering my back as well.
No, but and obviously taking it back to the sort of charity context we've seen over the past few years, loads of natural disasters and catastrophes taking place around the world and as well in Europe, including flooding and drought and fires. And many charities are at the forefront with international aid being more required, actually, to support affected population. We've seen that in flood in Pakistan and also drought in East Africa and strong storm in the US. So charities, many more charities are actually called to support populations that are affected by climate change. And that actually leads us to our second question, you know, what should charities do at a larger scale to tackle climate change? Nick,
I mean,
you want to start?
Off, I'm a big believer that the larger scale kind of starts with the smaller stuff. I'll try and explain that. What I mean here is that I think it starts really with building an internal mindset to the climate change issue. Leaders have to lead their employees, their volunteers, and everyone must follow and be on board of these changes and everything that they do internally. And I'm talking on like a small things here and there on top of just everything else in terms of like using the right bins, to using the right resources, everything. And I think you may have to make sure that absolutely everyone in your organization gets buy-in into this, because if you don't, you don't really change that mindset, and sooner or later along the lines, you're not going to have that sustainability in being sustainable, if that makes sense. But yeah, I think it's all those things, and being a collection of all of those make a huge difference. And then from there, it's about leading by example. On top of that, you want to start promoting green because you're green within. And then you want to start sort of making the partnerships to make this go forward. And you need to, I'm just trying to explain that. Make sure that you're internally green before you start telling everybody you're green, because mm-hmm. once it's internal, then you can start pushing it elsewhere. I know that there was a survey done at the moment from Charity Finance Group, which revealed that 84% of charities don't have that net zero objective at the moment. And I think charities should actually be living and breathing that objective. I know it's really tough, but you've really got to start looking to make those changes now to make that objective. So, but also I think once you've got that all in place, it's about embedding it everywhere and spreading that message far and wide. So you want to make sure that, you know, talking to your MPs and working with your local constituencies and such like that, or working with your local courses to make sure that everything you do is sustainable. But also making sure that you're really staying away from greenwashing things. Just to explain, that's the idea of sort of promoting the idea that you're greener than you actually are. I know a few weeks ago we did a podcast about trust within the sector, and I think that's a real good way to lose trust mm-hmm. in your users if mm-hmm. you start mm-hmm. saying you're the greenest company in the world when actually you're not. So really be careful when you're doing that. But, you know, if you're not dedicated to the cause, don't preach like you are, essentially. I think it's just all those little things that once you start have that internal mindset, everybody's on board, then you can start making the big changes.
Yeah, I agree with almost everything you said. In fact, everything, not almost. But I think to build on it, I think collaboration is one thing you mentioned or touched upon. And I think one thing the sector could do as a whole, and I don't see a lot of it, truthfully, is I think we could help each other, work together, mm-hmm. sort of push each other in the right directions, collaborate to add pressure to MPs, for example. You mentioned lobbying MPs. It's a lot more powerful when you have several charities joining together to lobby MPs or lobby change in any form, really. And you know, demonstrating your commitment to these things puts pressure and accountability on other people in the sector. If you come out and say, we are, you know, going for this cause, we are committing to net zero, for example, which is quite a startling statistic that you mentioned. I mean, the fact that most charities aren't actually committed is concerning, and we should be leading by example. And if you think of the finance sector as ahead of us, that's not a particularly good place to be in. But I think, demonstrating what you're doing and sharing what you're doing with other people. So tell charities what you're doing so that they can follow your lead and others can learn from you. Because I think one thing that happens particularly with smaller and micro charities is we often don't know what to do, and mm-hmm. and we can Google and learn stuff from Charity Digital and others, but we it's still hard to put those things in practice. Yeah. And I think that's where learning from others, if someone's telling people what they've done, you can do the same thing. Well, an example was people are sharing their sustainability strategies. Mm-hmm. I think this is something we had conversations with a people in the sector where they're sharing those, putting them into hubs of resources so anyone can do it. So because sustainability strategy or strategy built to tackle climate change is not something that comes naturally. That's something that's quite difficult to do and might be challenging. So it's something as a resource that can easily help people. I think on top of that, I think localizing a lot of your changes and campaigns, trying to find the issues that resonate with your audience. So if you are talking, this is specifically for climate change or charities built into that sustainability, but I think for them it's about localizing your issues, because again, sometimes the emotional connection we talk about when we talk about fundraising and service delivery and so on, and the basic heart of a charity, if it is existential, the world is going to end and all this, that actually isn't something that resonates with people, because it's something where they're told over and over again, often by people who take quite alarmist rhetoric, which actually undervalues what's really going on. And so I think actually finding local causes affected by climate change and real life instances of climate change is the way that you generate an emotional connection. And that's the way that you raise funds and engage better with your audience. So think about real life issues as opposed to these sort of broader theoretical ones.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I would also add that that for some organization it might be hard to relate their cause to climate change, but I have a few examples that sprung to mind when I did the research, and if for all the charities that are food banks, it's about the food waste and how you can ensure that the food that you're redistributing, or if you're a soup kitchen, how do you ensure that you're limiting food waste, or you're ensuring that all the cartons, all the materials that you're using for your action are properly recycled. Obviously, if you're a nature conservation charity, you're probably at the forefront and seeing the impact of climate change on, you know, on maybe the birds or the butterfly or the bees that you're protecting. So it's also very important to highlight that in your messaging. For instance, if you're also our youth charity, it's important to hear the younger generation opinion about climate change and involving them in projects that are related to climate change and helping them take a pledge as well. So there are a few. I think it's also very important for you to speak with staff and volunteers and get their thoughts on what climate change means for them and for the cause they are joining through your organization. And you'd be surprised, many of them have actually got some great ideas that they'd like to share with you. And actually, that leads us to the internal changes. So both of you were sharing some tips and examples in terms of internal change, but do you have other ones that charities might be keen to hear?
I mean, I kind of touched on it a little bit about the idea of the internally changing the mindset. That is the correct word. But I think it's something that has to be built into the strategy. Creating a sustainability strategy has to take into account that you need to be building that mindset and getting buy-in from your staff. It's all well and good writing this strategy about you're going to do X, Y, Z, and it's all brilliant. But if you're not thinking about the fact that obviously lots of people under this strategy have to operate it and put it through their own processes, then you're probably not going to see much success with that. And I think you have to make sure you're working with all your employees or your staff or volunteers to make sure they're on board with it. I think there's this common misconception also with this that people don't care or something like that. And actually, I don't think that's always quite the case. It's actually sometimes that people don't know properly. I think everyone's aware of it, but everyone's not really aware of the consequences that can happen or such. And sometimes it's also that you don't know where people are, staff are in their lives, and it might not be their priority. So I think it takes a lot of time to really sit down with your organization, have tough conversations with them, explain why you're doing XYZ. It could be that you throw a educational presentation to your staff to really explain why you're doing it, the causes of what's going on in the world, to sort of get everybody on board and so that everybody is fully buying into what's going on. and also gives you time, like I said, to sort of meet with your staff and see if there's more concerns going on in their lives that mean that they would take certain decisions over another, which would not help sustainability. Given at the moment we're in a cost of living crisis, I think that's even more important because people are going to, in their personal lives or in their work lives, are going to look to try and cut some certain corners to save money on bills and such. And I think you need to almost maybe sit down with people and show them the other options that there are, because there's lots of sustainable options for basically anything that you can do, which is still more in budget with things. And it's, sometimes it's just being a little bit savvy or just being a bit smart with how you do things. But I think leadership need to make that step up to make sure that they're helping everyone make those decisions correctly and not just expecting everyone to do the right thing.
Yeah, to build on that again, I think trustees are important. You mentioned leadership. I think there's always a leadership. Leadership should obviously lead the way with these things. That's tautology, but nonetheless, what I mean is essentially a lot of people that don't feel empowered at a lower level to do these things. And if leadership just open those avenues, people will be receptive and they will run with them. You just need to empower your staff to do so. Trustees should be at the heart of that and should be driving that. They should be holding leadership accountable on sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I don't see enough of that in the sector, to be completely honest. I think you should admit your flaws as a charity, the stuff you haven't done. The only way you're going to grow is by admitting your flaws and seeing where you can go from there. It's something we need to do. Charity Digital, I think, a little bit more of. And we can actually just admit that we don't do enough for sustainability and move forward and think about the ways we can. And remember, it's always within reason. I mean, you can't invest all your budget in there. You still need to think about service issues and everything else. But at the same time, you do need to implement little things. So, mm-hmm. So for example, one thing you could do is you could choose your suppliers a little bit more wisely. So third parties that you work with, you could have just a small system that checks their green, their green credentials, as it were, to see that they are committed in some form to ESG or sustainability. You could create a broad assessment of your carbon footprint, see where you need to make some changes. There's little things that we do at home that we don't do in the office. Recycling is a big one. Going paperless, trying to print less is a pretty normal thing, and reducing waste. Reusing old equipment or sending it to places that allow people to reuse it. Mm-hmm. And also, as Nick said, cost of living crisis, buy secondhand equipment as opposed to new equipment, which again is sort of against the sort of trend to single use items and so on. Not single use, but nonetheless. And then a few more things, looking at your website and how green that is. Your digital carbon footprint is probably a lot bigger than you think, and there's some really easy steps. We'll share it on the resources, but there's an article on our site which is just about, and these are sort of things you can do within a day to make your website's carbon footprint reduced. And the final thing I'd mention as well is I think charities should look at their finances. And what I mean by that is look at any investments you're making. We're seeing this across the board in the commercial sector. You're seeing banks de-invest. You're seeing universities de-invest from fossil fuel companies and so on and so forth. A lot of particularly larger charities may still have some investments in these people, in these places, sorry. And the other thing is it's not necessarily BP or Shell or anyone like that. Check the ESG and the green credentials of people that you invest in. It's essentially voting with your wallet is like a common phrase that people used to use. I don't know if they still do. I apparently still do. But nonetheless, it's basically if people are showing you who they are and they're showing you they care about the world, they're showing you they want to protect the planet, give them your money, invest in them. And you know, we're holding each other to account. That's the way it's going to work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If I can just add, because you made some, both of you made some very, very good points.
Thank you very much.
In terms of the ESG, just wanted to remind our listeners, maybe some of you might not be familiar with the ESG strategy, but ESG stands for Environmental, Social and Governance Strategy. It's way more common for corporate companies, but really any kind of organization can have an ESG strategy. And it's basically how can your actions and the advancement of your cause can also contribute to make the world a better place. So like you said, Johan, your investment, your finances, your actions at a leadership level. I was, during our researches, I've found some very good articles, and one of them was saying, actually, I think it was a Charity Digital article, to be fair. It was talking about the frameworks you can use because it can seem a little bit daunting. And basically, there's the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And it's basically a good place to start because it's simple and it can really help opening the conversation within your organization. And actually, when it comes to investment, like you said, it's best to put our money where impact is actually being felt. And there was some research done by Newton Charity Investment Survey that showed that 85% of charities feel that ESG factors are very or quite important to them. Mm. And 82% now believe that it is their responsibility to think about climate change specifically. And so with that, we've seen recently Charity Aid Foundation that also specialized in investment products for charities. And they have some products that specifically focus on this type of ESG strategy. So it's very important to check them out and to just review your investment, really. If you're a charity that is lucky enough to have some investment and review that, I think it's a good way to start. And they also, we put the resources in, but there's a few tools that you can use to measure your carbon footprint, as in the total amount of greenhouse gases released into the atmosphere as a result of your actions. And there are some free carbon footprint calculators. There's one by WWF that you can use. And there's another one that's specialized on your website, because you might not think of it as a particularly way that your charity is polluting, but actually your cloud and the data that you store has got also a lot of impact on greenhouse gas emissions. And the average web page tested produce, I think, more than almost 2 grams of carbon dioxide per page view. So if a website gets 10,000 monthly page views, which is our case, or more than that, actually, there's a lot of kilograms of carbon emissions that we're doing per year.
It's much more than that.
It is much more than that.
From the content editor.
It's much more than that. So there's actually quite a few tools available for you to just check your cloud carbon footprint. And obviously they're free. So it's worth checking out. I don't know if Nick, you wanted to add more to all these points.
There is a lot.
Yeah, no,
I mean, I've spoken about this now at great length about the idea of leadership helping out, I guess, to tie everything together. Everything we've just said, make it as easy as possible everything we've said for everybody to get involved. And I'm talking like from making your bin system so simple that everyone just does it, to making these grand strategies that Lisa's been telling us about as easy to read as possible. Mm. Just so that, once again, your sustainability is sustainable. I'm too proud of that now.
That's a good word, to be honest. But yeah, and I mean, if there's one thing that you are willing to do, perhaps personally, what would it be? And Johan?
I'm luckily for this question, I'm a vegetarian, so I'm just going to run with that and tap myself on the back a little bit. But no, I don't think you should be a vegetarian if you want to be, but I don't think you need to be. I think eating meat, we know it's become very clear, obviously, the impact of methane, as mentioned earlier, is largely produced by cows. So the thing to do is cut out red meat as much as possible. But I think the statistics basically suggest that we live in a far more sustainable planet if everyone reduced their meat intake than if 5% of people became vegetarian. So basically the idea is, if everyone can cut down, this is where Meatless Mondays come from and stuff like that, is essentially we just need to cut down and have a more realistic diet in the Western world generally. And of course, China now is increasingly eating meat. So I think, yeah, that's the one thing I do personally. I think it's just cutting down as much as possible. Also, vegetarian options now are kind of like disgustingly unhealthy in the best possible way. So I think those are when I was a vegetarian 7-8 years ago, it was really quite tough out there, particularly in terms of burgers. But now, nowadays it's quite great. So I don't think it's as much of a sacrifice as it used to be. And then there's obvious stuff. Like, one thing just to mention is, Transport, obviously planes are sort of 28% of the emissions in the UK, I believe. This may not be 100% correct, it's off the top of my head, but come from travel emissions. And I think one thing is that planes are often the go-to and don't need to be. And what I mean by that is essentially you can find other options, whether it's a cool boat or a train across Europe and stuff like this. They are mm-hmm. quite affordable if you are willing to go at odd times typically, but I guess the point is that it's nothing wrong with traveling by plane. You can offset your carbon emissions as well, but what I would suggest is always have a bit of an eye out or a curiosity mm-hmm. around the other forms of transport that you might be able to take, because you'd be surprised by how A, affordable they are, but B, how kind of fun they can be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would be my two, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Nick?
It was a bit more than two. It felt like more than two. But excellent stuff, Ewan. Thank you so much for that. So I guess on a personal level, mine is more on a tech kind of level, that I've always been interested in this kind of stuff because I've built PCs and stuff like that. But one of the things I tend to do, and I think that lots of people should definitely look out for, is when you're buying technology, and it's something basically no one ever does, is check the efficiency of the technology you're buying. What I mean by this is that some things will absorb far more electricity than others while doing the exact same thing. Sometimes it's just a case of the power supply that you're using for your laptop is far more efficient. Now, on paper, that doesn't sound as much of an issue because what you're operating will operate at the same level. However, it will use more energy. Your bills will go up as well if you buy really shoddy stuff as well. But it's one of those things to really look at how it's using that efficient energy and such. I know it's one of those things everyone loves talking about, leaving the light on, the standby light on a TV, which yes, it makes a difference. But also if your TV is really shoddy use of electricity, which is something you can look up, all this stuff you can look up online, then it's actually more important than leaving on the standby light. I mean, a good example of this at the moment is that in the news at the moment, they're pointing out that you shouldn't be streaming Netflix and such off a console, because a console will use far more energy for streaming than a dongle or a smart TV with. And I know it's recently come out that the newest consoles, PlayStation 5s and Xbox and stuff like that, use a ton of electricity just to stream things. Little things like that make a huge difference, especially because it's kind of, most people have a smart TV in their home at this point. So it's just making that small little change can have a huge impact on, like I said, and just check all your power supplies on things. They're really important. On top of that, I mean, on a personal note, I've gone the cost of living thing going on. I've gone quite good at making sure I'm just turning everything off and having short showers. My mother, unfortunately, made me use a shower timer most of my life because I used to sit down and just relax when I was younger. So now I've gone quite good at just being in there as quick as possible. So get a shower timer. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, absolutely.
Thanks for telling us about your shower routine, Nick.
That was very inspiring. Thank you.
Yes.
And when it comes to me being a big foodie, it's really about cutting down the meat and focusing on the quality of the ingredients and buying them in season. I know that especially when you shop in supermarkets, you can have strawberries and raspberries all year long. But I think it's very important that people realize what is actually in season. There's more education being made, and also loads of shops are taking the steps to remove the best before date, so that we're cutting food waste. So my action would be around food waste, trying to reduce that as much as I can, and shopping in season. But yeah, I think that's very important, and that's great. We will be held to account. We'll be held accountable on all the actions that we're sharing today, i.e., vegetarian and very short showers and very, very powerful, but electricity savvy equipment. So I don't know if you wanted to add anything else, Johan.
Yeah, I mean, I'll add just a final bit about using your voice, I think, is the final thing to take it away. And that's pester your MPs on sustainability issues. Just join campaigns, join movements, whatever one that basically aligns with your aspirations, and just get involved really is another key thing on a personal level, because it's important and we talk about it a lot, but the things that are going to change are activism and supporting causes that put pressure on policymakers. And then the other thing to mention is probably just some of the resources available. We will put them In the resources tab, you'll be able to find all these, but there's so much information out there and it's updated constantly. And this is from the Met Office, the Geological Society, the Organization for Economic, the OECD, and then the UN, NASA, and it goes on, and all these big sort of government bodies have great information on what's happening in the world. It's often scientific and can be confusing, but a lot of it is simplified by these organizations, and it gives you a really good sense of what's going on. So educate yourselves and your teams, I think, is a final thing to say, because it's going to be around, it's going to dominate our discourse for years and years to come, and it's obviously super important. So
No, absolutely. But well, I think that's a wrap. Thank you very much to the both of you for sharing very excellent tips, actually. And we hope that you, our dear listeners, have enjoyed as well. It was actually our 100th podcast, as I was saying. So we really hope this episode will help you make a start or accelerate the actions that you and your organizations are taking on climate change. We are definitely taking actions, as you've heard, and we are working on some exciting things on sustainability in the next few months, which you can look forward to. So keep up to date as usual on our social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, and then you can continue to check all our content on sustainability for the charity sector and many more topics on our website. We wanted to say a massive thank you, as more and more of you are joining us each fortnight. And it's just amazing to do these podcasts with the team.
Thank you, everyone.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. You've been brilliant.
Well, our 101st episode will be about how to implement a digital strategy. So you hope you'll listen to. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
'We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.